Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, March 1st, 2022. Coming up this hour.
Russia steps up shelling of key cities in Ukraine. We are live with the latest.
More companies abandon ties to Russia as Moscow becomes increasingly isolated.
And the war becomes a key focus for President Biden in tonight's State of the Union address.
New York Mayor Adams says the NYPD has been too slow in designating hate crimes. Plus, Hong Kong's COVID-19 fatality rate is now one of the highest in the world. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Blowout loss for the Nets. Easy win for the Devils in a marathon bargaining session to try and end the baseball lockout.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and global stocks are retreating this morning. We are coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are down 25 points, Dow futures down 162, and NASDAQ futures down 116. 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 1.80%. The yield on the two-year, 1.40%. Nathan.
Well, Karen, we'll have more on the markets in a minute, but we begin this morning in Ukraine. Russia has escalated shelling overnight in key cities as a large Russian convoy moves slowly toward the capital of Kyiv. Amy Morris has the latest from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Senators held a closed-door briefing on the Russian invasion of Ukraine last night, where Ukraine's ambassador said her country needs more military weapons. Republican Senator Mitt Romney says the U.S. can provide some help.
We continue to have the capacity to get armament and nourishment to fighters in Ukraine. That's done not by us directly.
Democratic Senator Chris Coons says they're bracing now for a humanitarian crisis.
I suspect Russia will try and starve the population of Kyiv. We have to be prepared to provide significant humanitarian relief.
New satellite images today show a 40-mile-long Russian military convoy just north of Kyiv. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Amy, thank you. As Russia steps up attacks on Ukraine, the fighting could turn even more brutal. That's the concern we're hearing from retired Lieutenant General Ben Hodges, the former commander of U.S. Army Europe.
It was 2 days ago, the whole world saw this missile that slammed into an apartment building, and that sort of thing is going to increase. I think he will do whatever it takes to, number one, to decapitate the government, and number two, to avoid the humiliation of his forces being defeated and not able to take Kyiv.
Retired Army Lieutenant General Ben Hodges spoke with our Washington correspondent Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Sound On. Catch the program weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio.
The list of companies abandoning Russia is growing quickly, Karen, and the mass exodus is reversing three decades of investment by Western business. Bloomberg's Renita Young joins us live with the details. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Russia's largest foreign investor, BP, led the way with its surprising announcement on Sunday that it would exit its stake in state-controlled Rosneft. That move could result in a $25 billion write-off and cut its global oil and gas production by a third. Shell followed yesterday, saying it's ending partnerships with state-controlled Gazprom, citing Russia's, quote, senseless act of military aggression. And Equinor, which is Norway's biggest energy company and majority owned by the state, also announced it'll start withdrawing from its joint ventures in Russia, worth about $1.2 billion. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. A couple of Wall Street titans are speaking out about the Russia invasion. J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon warns that disconnecting Russian banks from the SWIFT messaging system may bring unintended consequences.
A sanction says I cannot do business with you. A SWIFT thing says I can't use a communication to do business with you. I can still do business with you. And there are a lot of workarounds in SWIFT, so they're different tools, we use for different reasons.
J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon made the comments in an interview with Bloomberg's Ed Hammond. Stay tuned for more of that conversation coming up later this hour.
Well, we also caught up with Citadel founder Ken Griffin. The billionaire says this is a very critical time in geopolitics.
I think we're at a very, very, very volatile inflection point. It will come down to whether or not the Russians will be satisfied by simply extending their effective borders in the Ukraine. Will they take Kyiv? Will they position themselves to reach beyond the borders of the Ukraine. The last is terrifying to markets.
Citadel founder Ken Griffin made those comments in an upcoming interview on Bloomberg Wealth with David Rubenstein. The show debuts March 22nd at 9 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Television.
Well, Nathan, market volatility remains high as world powers step in to isolate commodity-rich Russia. Let's get the latest on the action live with Bloomberg's John Tucker. John, good morning.
Karen, the risk to markets includes disruptions to supplies of raw materials, which threaten to stoke high inflation and hamper growth. We saw Bayer this morning warn that the Ukraine invasion poses a risk to its outlook. Those pressures may also impact monetary policy. Brett McGonigal is chairman of Capital Link.
At the end of the day, what I think is going to happen is this gives some sort of a pause to an overly hawkish Fed.
And Deutsche Bank strategists say stocks typically decline about 6 to 8% after a geopolitical event before retracing those losses in about 3 weeks. Aside from equities, oil pushing higher as investors try to figure out whether a possible release of strategic reserves will have much of an impact. And checking prices right now, Brent crude is up $4.24 at $102.21. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, John. The invasion of Ukraine will take the spotlight tonight in President Biden's State of the Union address. Originally, he planned to highlight the improving coronavirus outlook and rebrand his domestic policy priorities. The timing of tonight's speech creates a large opportunity for the president. That's according to Barbara Perry, director of presidential studies at the Miller Center of Public Affairs.
If he seizes this moment, gives a good, solid speech, acknowledges people's pain, points out what he's done well, where his victories have been. And I think on the Ukrainian business, this could be his Ishbi-9 Berliner moment of John Kennedy, you know, standing at the Berlin Wall in 1963. I don't know how to say it in Russian, but Ishbi-9 Ukrainian.
Barbara Perry was a guest on Bloomberg's Balance of Power. You can catch a special edition of the program tonight with live coverage of the State of the Union starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and Television. Futures lower ahead of the open this morning. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg. 5:07 on Wall Street, 32 degrees in Central Park. Still some lingering road work on all three Hudson River crossings. Janelle Crispin's got the details on that for you shortly. First, Michael Barr is here to tell us what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York City Mayor Eric Adams said he hopes replacing the NYPD's hate crime unit head will add a sense of urgency to the issue.
I thought we were too slow in designating, investigating something as a potential hate crime.
Mayor Adams says that he wanted a new face and a new vision investigating hate crimes. Earlier this month, the NYPD reassigned Inspector Jessica Corey, head of the Hate Crime Task Force. The decision followed a number of high-profile incidents targeting members of the Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders communities, as well as an overall increase in hate crimes across the city. Meanwhile, Mayor Adams also talked about the city hoping to lift more COVID mandates in businesses and schools.
We are trending in the right direction. And every morning when I wake up and speak with my doctors, as I stated from the beginning, we're going to follow the science. And they have followed the science. We want to get to, we're at the right level we want to be. We just don't want to move too quickly now that children are coming back.
Mayor Adams talked with Bloomberg's Joe Matthew on Balance of Power. Hong Kong's COVID-19 fatality rate is now one of the highest in the world. There has been a wave of deaths among its under-vaccinated elderly population. The city reported 117 new COVID deaths today. The Senate last night took up the issue of a woman's right to an abortion. The vote to open debate on the Women's Health Protection Act failed. Republicans widely opposed the bill and filibustered it, stopping the measure from proceeding in the legislative process. Still, Democrats went ahead with the vote to put Republicans on record opposing the measure. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York says he supports the bill.
We must fight to stop these insidious efforts to curtail a woman's right to access safe, legal abortion. And we must assert the federal government's role to protect this constitutional right.
The bill is meant to federally safeguard abortion rights, which faces an uncertain future in the U.S. Supreme Court. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:09 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stenshauer.
Good morning, Nathan. Long night for the Nets in Brooklyn. Toronto scored 42 points in the first quarter, and the rout was on. Raptors won 133-97. Rookie Scottie Barnes scored 28 points, made his first 11 shots. Nets still without Kevin Durant. He is expected back soon. They were without Kyrie Irving, who hasn't played a home game all season. And their coach, Steve Nash, who was at the arena, even did a pregame presser, then had to leave for health and safety protocol. Nets have now lost 14 of 17. Irving did lead them to a victory last weekend in Milwaukee and then spoke about being allowed to play home games despite being unvaccinated.
You know, just remaining patient and just seeing where things end up in this next week or so or next 2 weeks. I'm not too sure, but I know as much as you do. And I want to say this, is that I'm very appreciative of all those that are pushing behind the scenes to make our world a better place.
New York City is going to start allowing unvaccinated fans into the arena, but it's not known if that'll mean Irving will be allowed to play. Devils, a 7-2 rout of Vancouver. Fordham reached 500, 85-73 over UMass. Still no labor deal to end the baseball lockout, but at least they are trying. The two sides met until 2 a.m. They'll be back at 11 this morning. They pushed back the deadline. It was to be last night. If no deal, then opening day would be postponed. That deadline is now 5 o'clock today. Earlier, the big baseball story was Derek Jeter's resignation as CEO of the Miami Marlins, an apparent disagreement with his boss over the direction of the franchise. Jeter had a 4% ownership stake, which he will now sell off. John Stashauer, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Okay, John, thank you. S&P futures now down 31 points. Dow futures down 208. NASDAQ futures down 135 points. That's a drop of nearly 1%. The 10-year Treasury up 7/32. Now the yield 1.80%. Yield on the 2-year 1.40%. NYMEX crude up 3.1%, up $3.01 at $98.75 a barrel. Stay with us. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, increasing clouds and a high in the mid-40s today. We'll be near 50 tomorrow with clearing skies and mostly sunny Thursday, but chillier with a high only near 40. Right now, 32 and partly cloudy in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks in Europe are lower along with U.S. stock index futures. Bonds are gaining as the conflict in Ukraine intensifies amid mounting penalties against Russia. Utilities and travel stocks are leading a decline in the Stocks Europe 600 as traders assess the effect of sanctions. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, futures, S&P futures, down about 28 points. Dow futures down 180 and NASDAQ futures down 116. The DAX in Germany is down 2.3%. 10-year Treasury up 8/32, yield 1.79%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.39%. NYMEX crude oil is up 3.2%, up $3.06 at $98.79 a barrel. COMEX gold up 1% or $19 at $19.19.60 an ounce. The euro, 1.1176 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3403. And the yen is at 114.83. Bitcoin this morning moving higher at more than 3.5%. At $43,180. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. A 40-mile convoy of Russian tanks and other vehicles is threatening Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, as an intense shelling attack targeted the country's second-largest city. Meanwhile, both sides look to resume talks in the coming days aimed at stopping the fighting. Major League Baseball has extended its deadline for reaching a labor deal to today at 5 p.m. for salvaging opening day as scheduled on March 31st. Locked out players and team owners engaged in a series of intense negotiations that began yesterday and stretched into early this morning. In the NBA, the Nets lost. In the NHL, the Devils and Bruins won. The Capitals lost. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan?
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and our executive editor for international relations, Rosalind Matheson, is with us this morning as we continue following the latest developments out of the war in Ukraine. Roz, good morning. We've seen the dramatic images of the government headquarters in the second largest city, Kharkiv, being bombarded, and now this word of a 40-mile convoy headed toward the capital, Kyiv. What's the latest?
Well, that's right. What we're seeing is the fighting escalating on the ground, but also shifting perhaps to a new stage from the Russians after 6 days of fighting and possibly quite a sense of frustration at progress, certainly not anticipating the level of the resistance that they would encounter from the Ukrainian forces who've been fighting with determination around the country, even though they are, of course, outclassed militarily by the Russian military. So what we're seeing is an escalation also in aerial bombardment, key cities like Kharkiv coming under extensive bombing overnight again, and also cities further to the southeast also suffering as well. And that perhaps reflects a sense of the Russians of wanting to escalate to try and get some progress here. And you can do that perhaps more effectively just by picking up that bombardment campaign instead of waiting for troops on the ground to move forward. Certainly that large convoy is heading towards Kiev, but it's making very slow progress on tricky roads, difficult terrain. Those roads are very narrow. They're also full of potholes. So just the movement is quite difficult. And so being slowed down by that alone. So you can see there's definitely a shift in tactics on the ground as a result.
And you wonder whether the shift in tactics is as a result of the resistance that we're seeing from Ukrainian forces or the impact that the Russian economy is starting to feel now with these sanctions taking hold and near universal, it seems, business reaction, basically cutting off ties to Russia. It could be a combination of those things. What's the assessment?
Well, certainly as his economy gets squeezed and that filters down to Russian consumers as well as to the upper echelons of power in Russia, you can imagine that the Russian president would be keen to mitigate that and to minimize it as quickly as possible. So that might be a factor in his thinking, but also the cost of the invasion themselves are considerable. He had massed up to 200,000 troops and a lot of equipment on the border over a period of months, sustaining that force ahead of invasion on the border, doing some very big drills in places like Belarus and now the actual war itself. And so the financial costs to him from that are also rising. They're probably dwarfed by the economic penalties he's facing, but certainly a factor in his thinking, no doubt.
Yeah, and a pretty startling headline we saw from the Minister of Defense of Russia, Sergei Shoigu, saying that Russia will pursue the Ukraine offensive until all goals are achieved. It sounds as though they at least feel undeterred, or as you mentioned, the shift in tactics there. But what's the implication if we hear from the Russian defense minister that this bombardment, this escalation of fighting in Ukraine could continue?
Well, the fear is also not just what happens inside Ukraine with that, but also the risk that as time goes on and those campaigns continue, do you start to see things seep outside the Ukrainian border? Of course, there was concern yesterday from Poland that Russia might move very close to the border in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Poland, and try and block that border off in the exodus of people. So you're bringing Russian troops and equipment and planes potentially into ever closer proximity to those of NATO countries, and that could risk some kind of incident, misunderstanding or whatever that essentially then sees NATO troops in direct conflict with Russia. Of course, the Russian president has also put his nuclear arsenal on higher alert, and that's raising a lot of concern across Europe. So the risk is not just that the conflict escalates for the people of Ukraine and unfortunate consequences of that for civilians, of course, in city areas, but that this could blow into a broader conflict even that's not currently intended.
We only have about 30 seconds left here, Roz, but we've seen the pretty extraordinary support that Ukraine has been receiving, Germany stepping up its defense spending as well. Is there more that can be sent in that Ukraine could expect in terms of support from the U.S. and allies?
Well, there were some reports. Ukraine said this morning that they would, that countries in Eastern Europe had agreed to send them a bunch of fighter jets. Of course, Slovakia, Bulgaria are amongst the countries that have now denied that, because sending in fighter jets that have actually originally been made in Russia would have put more aircraft in the airspace there and risk further conflict and catastrophe. So beyond that, they're simply sending in mostly on the ground arms and other weaponry.
Thanks for the time, as always. Rosalind Matheson, our executive editor for international relations at Bloomberg News, as we continue monitoring developments in the war in Ukraine and the market reaction. Right now, futures are falling ahead of the open on Wall Street, with S&P futures now down 28 points, Dow futures down 187, and NASDAQ futures lower by 114 points. Just ahead, the Pentagon looks for de-escalation plans from Russia, and the war whipsaws markets. Top stories of the morning just ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 1130 weather. Clouds will increase today. Highs in the mid-40s. We'll be near 50 tomorrow under clearing skies. Chance of a little bit of rain tomorrow night, but it'll turn mostly sunny Thursday with a high near 40. Right now, 32 in Central Park.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by SEI. Visionary asset managers find opportunity where others are challenged. Exploit disruptions potential with SEI's global operating platform. Find out how at SEIC.com/IMS.
And we're about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Moscow has stepped up shelling in Ukraine, and Russian troops are on the move. Satellite images show a 40-mile-long military convoy just north of Kyiv. At the same time, the Pentagon is mulling a plan to deal with Russia if it eventually decides to de-escalate. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
A plan being called a deconfliction mechanism, and spokesman John Kirby says this could happen as Vladimir Putin has met more resistance than he expected.
You got to hand it to the Ukrainians, who have been fighting very hard for their country and making an impact and making a dent.
Having said that, Kirby says Putin still has more troops available.
He hasn't moved all of it into Ukraine, but he's moved the majority of it. He still has a lot.
In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Ed. And as the conflict deepens, the list of companies abandoning Moscow is growing. Bloomberg's Renita Young joins us live with the details. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Russia's largest foreign investor, BP, led the way with its surprising announcement on Sunday that it would exit its stake in state-controlled Rosneft. Shell followed yesterday, saying it's ending partnerships with state-controlled Gazprom. And Equinor, which is Norway's biggest energy company, also announced it'll start withdrawing from its joint ventures in Russia, worth about $1.2 billion. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Renita, thank you. The markets have been whipsawed by the war, along with steps to isolate commodity-rich Russia. And we get the latest on that live with Bloomberg's John Tucker. John.
Karen, the S&P 500 trimmed a drop yesterday that reached 1.6% while still notching its second month of declines. The tech-heavy Nasdaq finished higher yesterday, but is still down 14% from its November record. J.P. Morgan Chase strategists say the war in Ukraine has dim prospects for aggressive Fed rate hikes, and that should bolster American stocks even as markets endure this bout of volatility. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And John, the conflict in Ukraine has energy prices pushing higher despite whispers of a possible release of strategic oil reserves by the U.S. and its allies. Checking prices now, NYMEX crude's up 3.1% at $98.66 a barrel. Brent up 3.6% at $101.44.
And the Russian invasion will be a main topic tonight at President Biden's State of the Union address. Nathan, tune in for live coverage of the speech beginning at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and Television. Your top local stories straight ahead. This is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. 5:33 on Wall Street, 32 degrees in Central Park. Got a disabled vehicle westbound on the Bruckner at the Bronx River Parkway. Details on that coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr's here with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Nathan, thank you very much. New York City Mayor Eric Adams said the city's police department has been too slow in designating and investigating incidents as a hate crime. During his news briefing, Adams says that he hopes replacing the NYPD's hate crime unit head will add a sense of urgency to the issue.
I'm not going to govern the city based on stats. We're going to be clear. If there's a crime, we're going to report that crime.
Mayor Eric Adams also says that he can't make a vaccine exception for the Brooklyn Nets basketball star Kyrie Irving, who is prevented from playing in home games at the Barclays Center because he's not vaccinated. Adams spoke to Bloomberg's Joe Matthew on Balance of Power.
Mayor Adams, will you revoke the private employer mandate so Kyrie Irving can play at the Barclays Center?
That's the question we hear all the time. Listen, the mandate's got us here. We can instantly get Kyrie to play. Just get that shining arm.
Mayor Adams also says he plans to announce lifting the city's public sector vaccine mandates next week. Hong Kong residents emptied store shelves in a scramble to prepare for a reported lockdown of the city later this month. Amid a snowballing COVID outbreak, Hong Kong's COVID-19 fatality rate is now the highest in the developed world. California authorities say a man shot and killed his three daughters, their chaperone, and himself during a supervised visit with the girls at a church in Sacramento. Sacramento County Sheriff Spokesman Sergeant Rod Grassman says the shooter was estranged from the children's mother.
This is, as far as I can see at this point, a domestic violence-related sort of incident.
Sergeant Grassman says the victims included three girls ages 9, 10, and 13. Senator Joe Manchin says he wanted the administration to encourage more domestic energy production. The West Virginia Democrat says he was planning weeks of hearings on energy independence, both for the U.S. and to support NATO allies. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashar.
Thanks, Nathan. Baseball's opening day scheduled for March 31st. Will it happen? We still don't know. MLB had set a deadline for last night. If no labor deal, then the lockout, then the season would be shortened. They have now extended that deadline to 5 o'clock today. The two sides were at the bargaining table until 2 a.m. and will return at 11 this morning. Commissioner Rob Manfred emerged at around 6 last night, said, "We are working at it." MLB put out a statement that read, "We want to exhaust every possibility to get a deal done." Meanwhile, Derek Jeter is no longer running the Miami Marlins. He resigned after 4 years as CEO. He will now divest his 4% ownership. Jeter clearly differed with principal owner Bruce Sherman on the direction of the team. The Yankees have named Hensley Mullins assistant hitting coach, former Yankee player. Mullins was actually a finalist to be Yankee manager when they hired Aaron Boone. Nets off the upset win in Milwaukee began a home-and-home with the Raptors. It was all Toronto in Brooklyn, 133-97. Same two teams again tonight in Toronto. 52 points last night for Ja Morant in a win for Memphis. The Devils with seven different goal scorers in a 7-2 rout of Vancouver. Fordham beat UMass, 85-73. Chuba Ohams, 23 points, 11 rebounds for the Rams. North Carolina beat Syracuse in overtime. NYCFC, the defending MLS champions, have signed a new player, New York City native named Maximo Carrizo. He signed what they call a homegrown contract on his 14th birthday. He's been playing the team's youth academy since he was 9. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thanks, John. 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Luxury fashion brand Hermes International is moving its U.S. headquarters to a building on Manhattan's Madison Avenue that's being redeveloped. The Paris-based designer is taking more than 71,000 square feet of offices at 550 Madison Avenue. The lease is for all of the space in the tower's 23rd through 25th floors. Citigroup's decided to change course on holding Wednesday's Investor Day meeting in person. The decision comes after two members of senior management tested positive for COVID-19. They say a virtual format is the right decision given the current circumstances. Bayonne, New Jersey-based Royal Wine will donate 100% of its proceeds through March 10th from two of its vodka brands to the aid organization Emergency Ukraine. Also Monday, Total Wine & More, a Maryland chain with many New Jersey stores, said it yanked Russian products from its shelves. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. Bloomberg Radio's on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on 1010 Winds in New York, we're talking about a lawsuit in luxury retail as Cartier sues Tiffany, claiming a theft of trade secrets.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that politicians from New York to Illinois to California are calling for public pensions to dump investments tied to Russia.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. United Airlines is continuing to fly through Russian airspace as rivals divert flights.
I'm Caroline Hepko, Bloomberg.
DAB, Digital Radio in London, where Portugal Boris Johnson meeting key Eastern European allies as the opposition calls for more to be done to help Ukrainian refugees.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting the Energy Department is recognizing Ford for joining its Better Climate Challenge.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. In response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Western leaders have agreed to exclude some of the country's largest banks from SWIFT, the messaging service that facilitates most money transfers globally. The move will deal Russia a brutal blow, but it could also have long-term consequences for international finance. As with any network, the value of SWIFT depends on the number of banks that use it. Only Iran has ever been cut off entirely. The example of Russia could prompt others, such as China, to turn to alternatives, fragmenting the global payment system and potentially undermining the U.S. dollar's dominance. That's why Western leaders, and particularly the U.S., should be wary of ejecting Russia from SWIFT completely. Their desire for bold action is understandable, but they should take care not to do something they'll later regret. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPINGO on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
Listen for Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPINGO. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Clouds will increase today with highs in the mid-40s. Clearing and milder tomorrow, high near 50 degrees. Mostly sunny, but highs only near 40 by Thursday. Right now, mostly cloudy, 33 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. A fresh wave of volatility hitting global markets as the conflict in Ukraine intensifies amid mounting penalties against Russia. Stocks in Europe are falling along with U.S. stock index futures, while bonds gain and oil pushes sharply higher. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, S&P futures down 30 points this morning, Dow futures down 210, NASDAQ futures down 110. The DAX in Germany is down 2.25%. 10-year Treasury up 19/32nds, yield 1.75%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.33%. NYMEX crude oil is up 3.25%, up $3.10 at $98.82 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 1.3%, up $24.70 at $19.25.30 an ounce. The euro, 1.1179 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3399. The yen is at 114.87. And Bitcoin this morning moving higher up more than 4% at $43,420. Today we are watching for reports on construction spending and manufacturing at a 10 o'clock Wall Street time. And Target is among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky says Russian missiles into the country's second largest city, Kharkiv, is open uncovered terrorism. Interfax News out of Ukraine reports Zelensky declared Russia a terrorist state. President Biden delivers his first State of the Union speech tonight. The president is dealing with low approval ratings and a stalled legislative agenda on top of the Russia invasion. Bloomberg will carry tonight's address starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. In the NBA, the Nets lost. In the NHL, the Devils and Bruins won. The Capitals lost. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. It's 5:49 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we remain fixed on the war in Ukraine this morning as Russia steps up shelling. Penalties from world leaders and big business are starting to hit Moscow now, and over the weekend, Western nations agreed to exclude some of Russia's banks from the SWIFT messaging system that's used for trillions of dollars of transactions around the world. But that move could have unintended consequences. That's according to J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon. He sat down to discuss the move with Bloomberg's Ed Hammond in an exclusive interview from J.P. Morgan's Global High Yield and Leveraged Finance Conference in Miami. Let's listen in now to that conversation with Jamie Dimon.
And just talk to me quickly about SWIFT and what that means for the global banking industry, if indeed these sanctions that have been proposed are followed through.
There's a little misinformation today. The government's going to decide how to use sanctions, how to use SWIFT. I don't want to bore your users. A sanction says I cannot do business with you. A SWIFT thing says I can't use a communication to do business with you. I can still do business with you. And there are a lot of workarounds in SWIFT. So they're different tools. They're used for different reasons. And, you know, the banks are talking to the government so everyone understands the issues, not because they're for or against any particular thing. War doesn't always follow the path you want. Financial sanctions don't always follow the path you want. So they, you know, people should be very thoughtful how they go about these things.
But the question of workarounds to SWIFT is a very important one, because that seems to be a concern, that if an alternative system is established and begins to get traction, that can present real risks to the sort of financial stability of the West.
Well, but remember, they can just stop us from doing it by telling us. A sanction is very targeted, very specific, very clean, and depending on how you apply it, you can apply that in multiple ways that you can't get around. There's no workaround in that kind of sanction, nor should there be. You know, I'm an American patriot, and we're going to do what the American government tells us to do, and so I think people worried. I think they're more worried about the unintended consequences. What countries do you hurt? What people are going to do workarounds? How you fix that in case you shouldn't? Remember, the government itself wants to have an open conduit, it looks like, for energy payments. So there are a whole bunch of issues they got to work through.
Before any of this started, there was obviously a lot of questions around the Fed and what they were going to be doing this year to try and get inflation under control. You've been public in some comments about where you think they've got it right, where you think they've got it wrong. Taking in everything that's going on at the moment, do you think what they've telegraphed is going to be enough to get the economy under control?
Yeah, it's really good to step back 2 years ago, because we were here 2 years ago. And then weeks after that, we had, you know, months after that, we had 15% unemployment, no vaccine. So I really applaud what the government did to get things back. And it's very easy to second guess and do all that. I hate doing it. I'm about to do it. They probably too much fiscal stimulus and quantitative easing, but you still have a very strong economy. And, you know, I think the Fed's going to try to meet that strong economy with strength, i.e. raising rates and, you know, reversing QE, not to eliminate, to slow it down so you reduce inflation and all that. And I wish them the best.
How many rate raises do you think we should see this year?
I mean, look, people are relying on 7 or 9. It could be 7 or 9. It could be more. It could be less. And obviously, when people say the Fed's going to be data dependent, well, of course. Can you imagine the Fed saying we're not going to be data dependent at all? So, you know, they should be data dependent. The stronger this is, the more they can raise it, and they'll keep all the issues in mind, and hopefully can offset it. And I do think, I don't think all of inflation is temporary, but I do think part of it, because the supply chains will get better over time. So they just got to navigate through that, and I don't think they should promise us what they're going to do, because they don't know what they're going to do.
They need to retain that flexibility.
They need to retain flexibility, yes.
A lot of fear going on from what's happening elsewhere in the world today. I wonder what your advice is to big corporate customers about how they deal with this, what seems to be a new normal in terms of volatility, whether it's induced by the Fed, whether it's induced by what's going on in Ukraine or elsewhere.
Well, basically, they've got to get used to it. You know, we have, you know, first of all, market volatility is not the same thing as the economy. And, you know, the economy looks like it can be pretty strong for a while. Obviously, there are things that are going to upset that apple cart. You know, market volatility, unless it affects the economy, most of people don't care. They don't pay that much attention to it. So I think you will inevitably have a lot of market volatility, both from, you know, the lack of bipartisanship, you know, the reversal of QE to QT. That's a very complex thing. Rising rates, you know, the market's already kind of high, you know, which makes it so. I think this kind of a normal state of affairs. I tell most people, I worry about serving my customer. I want to be for these customers day in and day out. I'll deal with the market volatility like the weather. That's fine.
Customers do worry about volatility because it changes their ability to make clear decisions over a time horizon.
I think very few do, actually. And I mean, I think, you know, confidence is not driven because of market volatility. It's this rule of law. Is the country going to grow and stuff like that? So, you know, some people react to market volatility. If it starts to affect the economy, like capital investment, consumer, you know, real consumer confidence, then the Fed will probably slow down what it's doing. And, you know, they don't want to do that. But my view is build the business for the long run. You know you're going to have some tough times. That's what we all live with.
And that was J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon speaking exclusively with Bloomberg's Ed Hammond from J.P. Morgan's Global High Yield and Leveraged Finance Conference in Miami. You can catch more of their conversation online at Bloomberg.com. Karen.
All right, Nathan, it is 5:54 on Wall Street, and this is Bloomberg Daybreak. And tonight, President Biden delivers his State of the Union address. Just 1 year ago, the political climate was starkly different than today, with a focus on domestic policy and recovery from the pandemic. Today, it's all about the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. There were promises made, kept, and missed in last year's address from the president. And Bloomberg Washington correspondent Joe Matthew brings us more in this special report.
America is on the move again.
On the eve of his 100th day in office, President Biden made lofty declarations to a joint session of Congress and laid out his vision for his administration.
America is ready for a takeoff, in my view. We're working again, dreaming again, discovering again, and leading the world again.
The president, however, has faced many hurdles, from a pandemic that has lingered long past when he had hoped, to a steady and persistent rise in inflation. While he came into office hoping for bipartisanship, many of the priorities Biden laid out in his first address have not landed.
Raise the minimum wage to $15. 4 additional years of public education for every person in America. The American Families Plan will finally provide up to 12 weeks of paid leave and medical leave.
The American Families Plan, which was later rebranded as Build Back Better, is dead, leaving those promises unfulfilled. The president also laid out a series of domestic goals that he has not been able to reach, including stricter gun laws, police reform, voting rights reform, and immigration reform.
The country supports this reform, and Congress should act.
Biden did, however, deliver on some of the promises he made during last year's address, including passing a bipartisan infrastructure bill that includes massive investments in fixing roads and bridges and in electric vehicles and broadband. Biden also pledged to remove all U.S. troops from Afghanistan during his first year in office. And while he followed through, the withdrawal was marred by the death of 13 American service members. That disaster in Afghanistan also saw a rapid return to power of the Taliban and is widely considered a foreign policy fiasco. When it comes to Russia, Ukraine was not even mentioned last year. Instead, Biden focused on election meddling.
So I responded directly proportionally to Russia's interference in our elections and the cyber attacks on our government and our business.
Biden will return to the House chamber more than a year into what has been a very challenging first term.
We have to prove democracy still works, that our government still works, and we can deliver for our people.
Still trying to prove that government, bitterly divided, can in fact deliver for the American people. In Washington, Joe Matthew, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Joe, thank you. And please join Bloomberg's Joe Matthew tonight as he leads our coverage of President Biden's second State of the Union address. And it all starts at 8:30 Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and Television. And futures this morning, falling. S&P futures down 22 points. Dow futures down 160. And NASDAQ futures down 81. The 10-year Treasury up 20, 30 seconds. The yield 1.75%. And the yield on the 2-year 1.32%. And still ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, a check on the business headlines and all the news you need to start your day. This is Bloomberg.